Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri, and the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide on the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and the Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the oil crash and you when we come back. If you're earning $50,000 a year and you pay all of your 14 taxes, then you get to keep 41% of what you create and produce. Government gets 59%. Now, that's about $20,000 for you and about $30,000 for the government. Now, isn't that just real special? Now, if you think that your share isn't enough for you, then why don't you work twice as hard and produce twice as much and make $100,000 next year, then go ahead and pay your same 14 taxes just like you did this year? Well, you're going to net 24% and the government will net 76%, which means that for working twice as hard and producing twice as much, you're going to net $4,000 more. That's about 8% more net take-home pay than you did this year. You'll produce twice as much and get 8% of it, and that's guaranteed by Congress and the IRS. That's why I contend that there ought to be something more intelligent for you and I to do than to work to put ourselves into the top 5% of income earners and then only net 25% of it. Why don't you call today and order my free 4-hour CD package and let me tell you how to deal with that kind of crime. It's 4 hours of entertaining information and it answers many of your legal questions about taxes and why it is that we're paying so much and receiving so little. Now, to order your free general law CD package, just call direct 417-273-4967, or you can go to the website georgegordon.org, click onto the email machine and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about energy. How is peak oil, how is the oil crash going to impact upon you, and what can you do to solve that problem for yourself? You know, here in America, we used to practice capitalism. We used to follow the Ten Commandments. We practiced the free market free marketplace, and we practiced property rights, limited government, and we believed in God. Today, we've changed all that. Today, we practice communism. Today, we practice the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. We subscribe wholeheartedly to central planning, the abolition of property and property rights. We're working pell-mell for world government, this new world order, and we believe implicitly in evolutionary philosophy. 100 years ago, we didn't have an energy crisis, and we didn't have any energy shortage. Today, with central planning, evolutionary philosophy, world government, and the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, we're being told that the world's running out of energy, and it's going to impact upon all of us. And what we're going to have to get used to is longer lines, shortages, and a lower standard of living. Well, that's probably true. And I would contend that the problem doesn't lie with a shortage of energy, but rather it's the problem that we have developed based upon our political philosophies. We have adopted a political philosophy of shortage. Communism and socialism, central planning, has always produced shortages, high prices, and inefficiency in China and Russia. Why should we expect today that it's going to produce anything different? Did we think that we can practice communism to a higher degree than the Chinese or the Russians, and that we can bring success out of their failed attempts? You know, my common sense says to me that we ought to do that which worked in the past. Today, we have an educational system in which Johnny can't read, but 100 years ago, Johnny could read, and we didn't have a problem with Johnny's scholastic ability. Has it ever occurred to anybody that maybe we ought to go back and practice the educational principles that we practiced 100 years ago? That maybe that would give us better results than the educational philosophies that we've adopted and are practicing today. I know it's a wild new idea, but if Johnny could read 100 years ago, either the Johnnies of today are more ignorant or stupid and can't learn, they're mentally retarded or something on that order, or if they're not, then there must be something that we're doing in our educational system that has stunted Johnny's ability to learn how to read and write, don't you think? Now, if 100 years ago we didn't have an energy crisis, we didn't have an energy shortage, is there something that we're doing today, politically or economically, that has created the shortage? Are there people in the world today that don't have an energy shortage, I want to raise my hand on that one because I don't have any energy shortage. But I'm not practicing the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, central planning, the abolition of property, world government, revolutionary philosophy. And I think that if George Gordon can solve his own personal energy problem, that my neighbor Dale Smith could do the same thing if he just did what I do. Well, if Dale Smith and George Gordon could solve the problem here in the poorest county in Missouri, surely you people out in Los Angeles and the Beverly Hills and Pasadena, where you've got lots of money and you've got lots of talent and ability and you're pretty smart people, you know, we're still wearing bib overalls and high top shoes out here. Surely you people can do it. If a hillbilly can solve that problem, surely you people with college degrees and PhDs ought to be able to solve the problem, shouldn't you? After all, you're smarter than we are, aren't you? Well, what about nuclear power? Has anybody thought about nuclear energy? I know it's about as popular as AIDS at an office Christmas party, but my common sense says that now that the nuclear genie, is out of the jar, and I mentioned this before, it looks like to me, if we could live for 5,000 years without nuclear power, we could have lived for another 200 or 300, but, you know, somebody woke up one day and said, hey, look what we can do. My observation is, just because we can do it, doesn't mean that we ought to. But we did. And now the nuclear genie is out of the jar, and there's a great controversy over this nuclear genie. Should we use it or not? Now, here we are running out of oil. There's no doubt about it. This oil is going to run out at some point in time. And it doesn't make any difference if it's in oil pools of organic material or it's inorganic material coming up from the heart of the earth. We're using this oil, this cheap energy substance, at an ever-increasing rate. And population around the world is growing at an ever-increasing rate. And the Chinese want to have the American lifestyle. If Americans can consume 3 gallons of gasoline per person per day, the Chinese, with their 1 billion population, want to learn how to do the same thing. So they want 3 billion gallons of gasoline a day. Not just 135 million, they want 3 gallons per person per day, just like we do. Well, you know, if the Indians and the Chinese and the Russians and everybody else in the world start consuming the world's natural resources like we Americans do, it's going to take a whole lot more than we've got. In fact, it's going to consume it all. And this is why people with PhDs and people that are smart and go to college want to limit the world's population. They want to bring world population control. In order to do that, you got to practice genocide, don't you? And you got to kill off a bunch of people. That's what they're planning. Makes all the sense in the world if you practice evolutionary philosophy. Now, the Japanese are producing about 40% of their national energy from nuclear power. The French are up to 60%. Now, we're being told that we can't do that. We Americans produce 20% of our energy in this country with nuclear power. Seems like to me if we can produce 20%, we could produce 40 or 60 or 80%. Now, you're not going to be able to produce 100% of your energy requirements from nuclear. But since we're practicing central planning, it would seem like to me that the central planners ought to get busy and use all of the available energy sources. Now, so far we're using coal, oil, nuclear, hydro, wind, solar, hydrogen, natural gas, shale oil, and wood. Those are the places where we've got energy. It's available, and it's called potential energy. And we need to turn that potential energy into usable, useful, productive, meaningful work. How do we do that? Well, George Gordon isn't going to go out and build a nuclear power plant. But the central planners should be building nuclear power plants. And we're being told that you have to choose between a nuclear energy or death. You can't have both. Well, that sounds like a sales pitch to me. Now, I'm an old-timey salesman, and I know that when I want to sell you something, I need to appeal to your vanity, your jealousy, your lust, your greed, or your fear. And when somebody tells me that I've got to choose between nuclear energy and death, they're appealing to my fear. We see this. It's a very effective tool in politics. And the political campaigners use fear. You want to elect a liberal like John Kerry? Do you want to trust your safety against the terrorists with a radical liberal from Massachusetts? Huh? See? Or John Kerry comes along and he's got his fear techniques too, you know. Do you want to be bogged down in a quagmire in Iraq forever and suck you dry? Never again, like Vietnam, to see the light of day? And so by using fear, they can sell us their product. Well, there are people out there buying it. I'm not buying into either one of those programs. In fact, I'm pretty convinced, especially over nuclear, that the last time I checked, there hadn't been any fatalities at all in nuclear power plants. Now, you can correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe somebody had a heart attack in a nuclear power plant and died there, but the last time I heard and did some checking around, we haven't had any accidents that caused any deaths in America from nuclear power. Now, they did over in Russia. That a pretty significant nuclear accident over there. But you know, in China, just this week, they had a coal mine accident that killed 4,000, or excuse me, it killed a couple hundred. But the news article said that this year, in 2004, they killed 4,000 Chinese laborers digging coal out of the ground. Now, if they're killing 4,000 Chinese a year, you know, in 10 years, that's 40,000 people. Sounds like that coal-generated electric power is a whole lot more hazardous than nuclear power, which hasn't killed anybody yet. See? And so the fear tactic that they use is, oh my God, look at the China syndrome. Why, we could have a meltdown that would go clear to China and just melt right through the center of the earth and come out the other side. See, that's what they're telling us. And people believe that kind of poppycock. I mean, honest to God, you know, they actually subscribe to that. And I don't mind, after all, nuclear power can only be handled by government and central planning. I mean, it's a big operation. You can't just go out here and build your own local nuclear power plant, can you? I haven't heard of anybody doing that yet, so. In fact, we've got central planning and government regulations to the point that I don't think you could just go out and dig a coal mine or just go out here and drill an oil well either. Now, 100 years ago, we used to practice the free marketplace. And if you wanted to dig a coal mine, you went out and did it. If you wanted to dig an oil well, you went out and did it. And if you caused a damage in the process, the damaged party would sue you and make you pay for it. And what we call that is individual responsibility versus collective responsibility. And it comes from a legal doctrine called limited liability versus strict liability. Now, God requires that we practice strict liability. The opposite to that is insurance or limited liability. That is, we want to limit our liability because we don't want to be responsible for our actions, which is where most Americans are today. See, Americans have now become so incompetent, so unable to take care of themselves, that we Americans cannot even provide a flu shot for ourselves. I mean, Americans by the millions are lining up to get this scarce flu shot. First of all, I don't think that they looked into flu shots, or they probably would be running in the other direction. I didn't get my flu shot this year, and I'm not going to get my flu shot because I want to make sure that you people that are struggling to get your flu vaccine can have my share. You'd have to drag me kicking and screaming to get me a flu shot, but then that's my own personal preference. But it would seem like to me that if I wanted a flu shot, knowing that there's a shortage this year, and there's been shortages for years, I would go to my family doctor, pay him $100 up front and say, Doc, for the year 2005, would you make sure that I get my flu shot? Would you make sure that you get my order in so that the manufacturer can make that for me? Would you do that for me? And I'll just bet you he'd do that. Now, if I could do that, I wonder if my neighbor Dale Smith could do that. Gee, I wonder if my other neighbor Don Uchman could do that. Gee, I wonder if a bunch of hillbillies wearing bib overalls and high-top shoes in Ozark County, Missouri, could plan ahead 1 year to get their flu shots for 2005. Well, could four people do that? Could eight people do that? Could 16, 32, and 64? You know, pretty soon, you people out there could provide your own flu shot. But you know what the problem is? It's George Bush. He didn't look ahead. He didn't plan for us. Our central planning system failed us. That's where we're at with nuclear power. You see, because each one of these industries, the coal industry, the oil, the nuclear, the hydro, and the natural gas, and all of these industries have lobbyists working in Washington. Now, let's be intelligent people. Let's suppose you've got a coal mine, and you're producing coal, and you're making money at it, and you're just happy as a clam at high tide, and everything's going along fine. Somebody comes along and says, listen, this coal produces acid rain, and we want to shut down the coal-fired power plants that burn this coal and produce acid rain, kill our fish in our lakes, and are destroying trees in our forests. Wouldn't you fight against somebody that came to Congress with that kind of a proposal? What if you're in the nuclear business? And somebody comes along and says, what we need to do is shut down all these nuclear power plants. And we don't want to build any more nuclear power plants. It's bad for the economy. It's bad for the environment. We don't know what to do with the spent plutonium and the nuclear waste. So therefore, we don't want to build. Wouldn't you be going to Congress and saying, wait a minute, we got to protect our turf? What if you're in the oil business and then you're producing oil? Somebody comes along and says, listen, we're running out of this stuff anyway. We got to replace it with solar, hydrogen, natural gas, shale, and hydro and so on. Well, wouldn't you be protecting your turf? And that's precisely what all these guys are doing. Every single one of these industries has staked out his own turf, and he's busily working in Washington. Archer Daniels Midland has staked out a little piece of turf over here on their product over here called ethanol. And they want to sell ethanol, and they want you to buy ethanol. God bless them. I think that you people that grow corn ought to be producing more ethanol. I don't want to buy it. I can live without it. And the reason is that it's inefficient. It takes more energy than it produces, and that's because we have to support it with tax subsidies. It's not a marketplace decision. It's romantic. It's politically correct. It's popular. But it doesn't make any economic sense. Because if it made economic sense, you corn farmers would go out and produce corn, reduce it down to ethanol, and go open up a gasoline stand down on the corner and sell ethanol cheaper than gasoline. And when you guys can produce ethanol for $1.50 a gallon when the price of gasoline is $2, you're going to have customers coming out your earballs until they find out that ethanol only has 40% of the power of gasoline. Which means that you're going to have to be competitive. You're going to have to produce this corn-based ethanol product for 40% of $2. So you take $2 times 0.40, and you got to produce that for 80 cents a gallon. You know, in round numbers, just take $2 times 0.40. Yeah, that's what I get, 80. Or 8 tenths. Now think of that. Can you compete with oil? I don't think so. Now people look at that and they say, well, see, the marketplace doesn't work. Well, the marketplace works perfectly. You see, we used to have a great whale oil shortage back in the 1840s and 50s, and people were worried about that, and they said, my God, the world's running out of whales. And when the world runs out of whales, we're going to run out of whale oil, and without whale oil, the economy will collapse. And so a guy by the name of Edwin Drake dug a hole in the ground, and he discovered petroleum. That solved the problem. Well, now we're drilling so many holes in the ground, government got into the business of regulating and controlling the oil industry. Now, there's a natural system for control in the marketplace, and it's called strict liability. Environmentalists are concerned about oil spills, you know, like the Exxon Valdez. There's no problem. There's no problem under the free marketplace. Now, there's a real problem in trying to enforce these kinds of regulations because, you see, the oil industry has all of these lobbyists in Washington. Let me give you an illustration. The Congress is elected by you people. And these congressmen want to get reelected. And so to do that, they've got to have money. They have to have money to put on these ads, these political ads, where one side lies about the other side and the other side lies about the other side. It's just a series of lies that we listen to, charges and countercharges, and isn't anybody can tell who's telling the truth. In order to get all of that money to spread all these lies on the television and radio and newsprint, they have to get it from donors. And those donors are the major corporations like Exxon. So when you have this major oil spill up here, the Exxon company is never responsible for their actions because they have insurance. They practice limited liability. Now, under the old system, we Americans practice strict liability, which meant that when Exxon had an accident like that, they would have to pay all of the damages to all of the damaged people. Everybody that was damaged would put in a claim. We'd go to court, and they'd have to pay it all. Now, if they had to pay for all of their damages and they didn't have limited liability, they'd be a whole lot more careful. I can testify to that. See, I don't have any insurance, so I have to be more careful. People without insurance don't need to be careful because they've got somebody else that's going to pay for their damages. They're not responsible for their damages. That's what insurance is all about. Well, anyway, these politicians who want to get reelected, they have to vote and they have to act and create policies that protect their donors. Now, let me give you another quick illustration. The pharmaceutical industry. They make up shots like flu shots. And Dick Armey, as he was leaving Congress, put a rider on a bill to exclude the pharmaceutical industry from any financial responsibility from side effects that come from those shots. So you can give your child a series of DPT shots and measles and flu and other things. And if he develops autism, you cannot sue the pharmaceutical company. They're not responsible. They've got limited liability granted by the sovereign, granted by God, Congress. Now, that's central planning at its apex. The central planners have decided that it's not good for you to sue them. It's not good that they be responsible for the damages that they cause out in the marketplace. Well, if we're going to practice that form of government, that form of economics, that policy, well, then there's natural consequences that flow from it. Communism and central planning produce for us just exactly what it produced for the Chinese and the Russians. Shortages, lines, high prices, and inefficiencies. That's the nature of central planning. Now, I'm not suggesting that we're ever going to go back, at least voluntarily, to the free marketplace here in America. But, you know, we, that is you and me, could become responsible and take care of our own flu shots. I mean, this is a wild new concept that I just broached today. But if you're desperate and in need of a shot for flu, assuming that you survive 2004, why don't you plan ahead since your government is inefficient? Incapable of planning for you, and they've let you down. What would happen if you said, well, to hell with government, let me take the responsibility, let me provide my own flu shot for the year 2005, 2006, 2007? Why don't you test it and just see, could I be responsible for my own flu shot? Well, if you could do a little thing like that and be successful at it, could you produce your own energy? Could you solve your own energy problem, independent of Exxon, Standard Oil, Archer Daniels Midland, the Congress of the United States, and the President, who's obviously incapable and incompetent and unable to do that for you? Could you do it for yourself? Well, I want to take on this issue of nuclear power, coal, oil, hydro, wind, solar, hydrogen, natural gas, shale oil, and wood. And a good listener sent in an article. His name is Tate, and that's his first name here. And this article is entitled, The Oil Crash and You. And this report tells us that there's not enough oil, we're running out, and there's no other solution. And the report contains articles and information concerning nuclear power. And in this nuclear power article, they say, well, nuclear power will not solve the oil crisis. And neither will coal, hydro, wind, solar, hydrogen, natural gas, shale, or wood. And I'm going to take exception to that, because if I can solve the problem for me, I don't believe that you cannot solve this problem for you. Now, it may require doing some things that you don't want to do. It may require that you have to take responsibility and you've got to go out and do something that nobody else is going to do for you. You've got to do it for yourself, and that's about as popular as AIDS. Nobody wants that. But I want to suggest that if you want to solve the problem for yourself, if George Gordon can solve the problem, you can, if you want to. Now, I can solve my flu shot problem. I'm not too smart, and I don't have a degree from college, but by God, if I wanted a flu shot, I'd get one. I don't want one, but if I wanted one, I'd get one. Hang on, we got to take a break here. We'll be right back with nuclear energy when we return right after this. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, the income tax and Social Security programs are not compatible with our traditional American values, and that's because these two programs are the second and the eighth planks of the Communist Manifesto. And these programs call for a heavy progressive income tax in place of tithing. Social Security is a social welfare scheme that takes the place of strict liability and individual responsibility. This income tax requires of us that we serve two masters in violation of Matthew 6, verse 24. The income tax requires of us that we rob God in violation of Malachi 3, verse 8. The income tax requires of us that we commit idolatry in violation of Exodus 20, verse 3. The income tax requires of us that we use unjust weights and balances in violation of Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. And the income tax requires that we sign contracts with foreign and alien gods in violation of Exodus 23, verse 32 and 33. Social Security violates the strict liability statute in Exodus 21, verses 28 through 36. And Social Security violates the 10th commandment by appealing to our lust and greed. We're then taught to call that income redistribution. The scripture calls it just what it is, covetousness and theft, in violation of Exodus 20, verses 15 and 17. Now, God gave us a better way of life than that, and our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention followed that better way and wrote it right into our federal constitution. And that's why I contend that you and I ought to learn how to practice a better way of life than income tax and Social Security. Now, for more information about tax and status, why don't you call direct 417-273-4967 and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. Tax and status is available on compact disc for adult home education. Now, if you're online, you can go to my website. It's called georgegordon.org. Click onto the email. Send me an email request for that free general law CD package. I want you to do it right now before you forget. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're going to take on nuclear energy next. Well, nuclear electricity generation remains flat in the IEO 99 reference case, representing a declining share of the world's total electricity consumption. Net reductions in nuclear capacity are projected for most of the industrialized nations. Well, why is that? Well, the central planners have decided that nuclear energy is bad for us. I didn't decide that. I lived up in Eureka, California, that a nuclear power plant. I think it was one of the first ones built in the United States back in 1954. As far as I know, it's still there, still operating. And nobody got killed. Nobody died. Everybody seems to be doing all right up in Eureka, California, on the north coast of California. And every year that it's been on there, we haven't been burning oil or coal. So we haven't been killing our trees, and then we haven't been consuming oil or natural gas that we could probably better use to power our automobiles and airplanes and things that we really need it for. It would seem like to me that if we're going to be central planners, that we ought to be planning to use all of these energy sources and in the right balance for the benefit of most of the people on planet Earth, and especially here in the United States. Nuclear energy's ability to soften the oil crash is very problematic. The United Nations Development Program, in its document Energy After Rio, reference 2, does not suggest a role for nuclear power except in the most doubtful of terms. The Swedish Parliament's February 1997 law beginning the phase-out of nuclear power is entitled Government Bill on a Sustainable Energy Supply. From the Uranium Institute's International Symposium 1997, they try also to defend nuclear energy there. Well, I'm going to pause here and make a little comment. If you want to abandon nuclear energy, that's fine. I don't see a problem with that. After all, the Swedes have come to the conclusion that nuclear energy is bad for them. Well, what are you going to replace it with? Now, maybe the greenies come along, and this has been my complaint about the environmentalists. They want to take the dams, the hydropower plants, out of the Columbia River. And what are you going to replace that electricity with? I've never heard anybody suggest what we're going to do to make the conversion. Or how much is it going to cost, and who's going to pay for it? Now, we paid a bundle of money to build those dams, and their complaint is it interferes with the fish. And I'm sitting here saying, why can't we have fish and electricity? Why can't we solve that problem? Well, because the government's involved. That's why you can't solve it. You see, any time that you get involved with government, remember, it's going to cost twice as much. There isn't anything that government cannot do for twice as much, half as well. Government can do anything half as well for twice as much money. I can't think of anything in my lifetime that government has attempted to do that they have been able to do as well as private enterprise. If you can think of something, why don't you tell me? Write me a letter and say, well, God, here's where government really shines. They've done this faster, better, cheaper, more efficiently than private enterprise or free enterprise. Now think about it. Mull it over a little bit. Now going on here, nuclear waste disposal is the major still unresolved problem. Why is nuclear waste disposal the problem? It's because the government's involved in solving the problem of nuclear waste disposal. That's what the problem is. See, here's what you do. Under the old system of free enterprise, anybody that wants to generate electricity with nuclear energy can go out and do it anytime they want, being 100% responsible for any damages that they cause. No limited liability. Number one, nobody would be producing nuclear power if they had to be responsible for all of the damages that they caused. So for all of you greenies out there and all you environmentalists, that would solve your problem. You don't want that nuclear power anyway. Think of it. I mean, if the electric power company had to be responsible for every dollar's worth of damage that they caused, and they looked ahead and said, oh my God, if we had a China syndrome nuclear meltdown, why, that would cost us a bundle. Why, we can't afford that. Now, just perchance, somebody came along and said, well, gosh, I think we could solve that problem. And here's what we're going to do. We wouldn't get in their way. And they would produce nuclear energy. And if they had an accident, they would pay every dollar's worth of damage. See how simple that is? And if they don't pay the damage, then we bore a hole in their right ear and sell them into serfdom until it's worked off. Now, I know somebody says, oh, that'll never work. Well, I don't know. God Almighty thought it would work. You haven't tried it, so you don't know whether it'll work or not. Now, do you? Well, nuclear waste disposal, they tell us, is the major problem. It's still unresolved, especially breeder reactors producing plutonium, a nuclear weapon, terrorist raw material, contaminating for 24,000 years. Wait a minute. Contaminating what? For 24,000 years. Now, you know, boys and girls, there's been places that are contaminated and are contaminating that human beings can't walk on. You know, like the top of a volcano, for instance. And we kind of stay away from that, don't we? Now, the fact that this stuff is still going to be around for the next 24,000 years says that, well, you got to put it someplace for the next 24,000 years that doesn't pose a problem. Well, somebody came up with a pretty neat idea, at least I thought it was pretty neat. They came up with a mountain out in Nevada. And it's called Yucca Mountain. God, the people in Nevada just came unhinged. They says, well, don't dump your garbage here. My question is, why not? What's wrong with putting it there? How is that going to impact you people in Las Vegas or Reno or any place else in Nevada if you bury that under a mountain out in Nevada? All right, well, if you don't want to put it under that mountain, why don't you put it under a mountain in Colorado or put it under a mountain in Pennsylvania? What the hell difference does it make where you put it? It's got to be safe. It's got to be secure. Somebody has to be responsible for it. Who's going to be responsible? Who wants to take on the responsibility of storing it? Now, it's being stored right now. All of this nuclear waste is being stored right now. Now, the people in Pennsylvania says, well, we don't want it stored here. Well, what the hell? It's being stored right there. Everywhere there's a nuclear power plant, they're storing the waste right there on the premises, right now, today, and doing it economically. Now, it would seem like to me that putting all of this nuclear waste in all of these various locations around the country, if it works today, then why not just continue on? Store it right there. And if you don't want to store it right there, why don't you central planners then figure out a place where you want to put it and put it there? Now listen to some of these hollow arguments here that, oh, that won't work. And that's the thing, Tate, that I'm amazed at in this report. Nothing works. There's no solutions. There's no solution to coal, oil, nuclear, hydro, wind, solar, hydrogen, natural gas, shale, oil, or wood. You might as well stick your head up your rectal region and wave goodbye and kiss off. There's no solutions. I don't subscribe to that kind of nonsense for a minute. Now, maybe the government doesn't have a solution. But you can rest assured that when you leave things alone and they quit tampering with them, that people will figure out what they want to do. It's called the marketplace. And if you practice strict liability, those people in the marketplace, when they see that they have to be responsible and that there are hard consequences for making mistakes, they don't make very many mistakes. The places that where we have the biggest problems in life is where government interferes in the marketplace. Well, yeah, that's right. Then you have nothing but problem. Well, going on, they tell us the half-life of plutonium. 239, the physics fact book, copyrighted 1998. And then there's abandoned reactors. Megadose of radioactivity, although it no longer contains its uranium fuel, the Trojan reactor vessel contains 15 times as much radioactivity as those objects, according to state officials. It was shut down in 1993. Pause, hang on a minute. Why did we shut it down? I mean, you know, once you build a nuclear power plant and you're producing power, why don't you keep it running for 150 or 500 or 1,000 years? Why shut it down? Well, the nuclear antagonists got after them, and because of nuclear regulatory regulations, it made it unprofitable. And so they said, well, we can't make money with this, and so we'll have to shut it down. That's what your problem is, government regulation. If you want to revitalize your economy, you Americans, let me show you how to do that. It's very simple. In China today, they have the fastest growing economy in the world. It's growing around 7% a year without any regulations. America's economy is stagnant, overburdened by regulation. In 1900, America's economy was growing 7% a year without any regulation. Now, I don't want to tell you people how to conduct your lives. I mean, after all, it's not my place to get in the way of your happiness and success. But Americans are complaining today, and they're saying, my God, my number one concern is the economy. Well, okay, if your number one concern is the economy. Have you ever thought about going back and doing what it was that you were doing when you didn't have an economy problem? I know that's a wild new concept, but it's kind of like Johnny could read in 1900. In 2000, Johnny can't read. Has anybody ever thought about, gee, well, what were people doing 100 years ago to teach Johnny to read? Your economy is stagnated today. What were you doing 100 years ago that was different than you're doing today? Why don't you think about going back to doing what you were doing in 1900? Now, if the Chinese economy, which was stagnant under communism, can thrive under free enterprise, can't we learn from that? Now, I'm an old-timey businessman, and I want to tell you a story here. I had OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission. I had a whole host and plethora of these government agencies attacking me back in the 1970s when I was operating the Atlantis Manufacturing Company. I got a firsthand look at this thing called regulation, government regulation. Regulation that we didn't have, you know, 30, 40 years before that. Well, one day I woke up and I said, you know, I think I've had enough of this crap. So in 1981, I closed the Atlantis Manufacturing Company. Now, a couple of years ago, I happened to be up in Boise, Idaho. I travel a little bit and I happened to be there. The plant was located at 408 and 412 South 9th Street. You guys up in Boise, that big yellow building across from Foster's Warehouse Furniture. Now, that building was empty, and I moved in there, and I put a plant together, and I employed 30 people, producing furniture and distributing that in 11 western states. We produced about $1 million a year in product, paid about $200,000 a year in taxes, paid our bills. It was an economically viable company. And then we got all these government agents coming in there, just raising hell with me constantly. And so one day I woke up and I said, you know, enough's enough. I don't need that. Now, I was supporting 30 people. Now, you think about it. You people out there, maybe you're working for wages and you haven't thought about this, but think about it. The boss can support himself. When he hires people, he's actually supporting a bunch of other people, isn't he? So when I make up my payroll, 30 other people are making their mortgage payments and 30 other people are making their car payments off of the wages, off of that business. Well, today that business is closed. That business doesn't employ 30 people. That business isn't producing. Those jobs are gone. And I'm not going to go out and recreate them. I can support myself. I don't need 30 other mouths to feed. I don't need 30 other families to take care of. I'm not the government. I'm not the central planner. So I'm out here taking care of myself, and I can solve my problems. And what I'm suggesting is that you can solve your problems, too. And that includes this energy problem. I solved my energy problem. You can solve yours if you put your mind to it. You can solve your flu shot problem for 2005 if you put your mind to it. And I'm not sure that the government can. I'm not sure the government's going to solve that problem. In my experience, every time the government gets involved in it, they screw it up. And they sure screwed up the Atlantis Manufacturing Company because it's no longer producing. Now, we still have furniture, but that furniture is being produced over in China and Philippines, and it's being shipped into the United States. And I don't think that's good for those 30 families and 30 jobs in Boise, Idaho. Now, evidently, you people thought that it was. You people thought that central planning and OSHA and the EPA and the State Tax Commission could do a better job than George Gordon could. By God, I don't want to get in your way. I closed her up. Moved out. And that plant and that building is still empty as of 2 or 3 years ago when I was last there. Still empty. Been empty since 1980 or 81. Now, how does that boost the American economy? How does that do anything for Americans? Can you answer that? Same thing's true here with power. You know, as soon as the government gets involved in this process, they close it down. You're producing less nuclear energy today than you were 30 years ago. You got the government involved. And if you're concerned about the problems, you know, about an abandoned reactor over here, that reactor wouldn't be abandoned without government regulation. Somebody says, well, we got to have government regulation. Why? You didn't have government regulation in 1890, 1900. But, you know, we Americans have taken on this concept of communism and central planning, socialism. You have to have regulation. Okay. Get after it. Until you close all of your nuclear power plants down, what are you going to replace that electrical capacity with? And I'm waiting for you greenies to send me a letter and tell me, what's your plan? What are you going to put in its place? A little later on, they're going to tell us solar and wind. Okay, who's going to finance that? How much is it going to cost? And who's going to put it? And how much is it going to produce? And when are you going to put this online? Have you got a timetable for it? I mean, you know, central planning requires get your plan out there. Otherwise, just leave it alone, and then the marketplace will take care of itself. That's where reality's at. And when you get the government off your back, you'll be amazed at what people can do for themselves. Americans used to be competent people. Americans didn't need government to tell them they needed a flu shot or produce or provide it for them. They could do that for themselves. They could take care of their own health. They could take care of their own economics. They could take care of their own education. Once you got the government involved, Johnny can't read, and we got an energy crisis, and our economy's upside down. I can't see where central planning's done anything for us. They go on here to tell us that two decades earlier than planned. See, they planned that nuclear plant ought to work from 2013. So they shut it down 20 years before its time. Now, after a series of problems, including a faulty safety system that drew federal fines, an accidental release of radioactive gases, and cracked steam tubes, nearly 800 spent but highly radioactive uranium fuel rod assemblies removed from the reactor over the years remain in the storage at the Trojan site. Now, I got to take exception to that. Do you mean to tell me that if I was running that plant, that I couldn't solve those problems? A steam pipe breaks, and so we have to shut the plant down? I mean, we can't re-weld the steam pipe? We can't fix that. It can't be fixed. You know, this is that old crap of, well, it's either or. You can't have both. I mean, you can't have hydropower and fish, not in the same river. You got to choose. And we're going to choose fish, so we're going to rip out all these dams on the Columbia River. I mean, that's what people are seriously talking about out there. They don't want to take those out of there. Those greenies do. And that's politics for you. You know, I'd say, well, fine. You know, there's no problem with that. Just buy it. I mean, if you don't want this dam here, why don't you buy it and remove it? That's the solution. Well, Bonnie Foster came over one time. I got to tell you something about Free Enterprise here. I was painting my building, and I, you know, 412 South 9th Street is off of Front Street about, I don't know, two, three blocks. There's a lot of traffic on Front Street, but nobody's driving down 9th, and I had a retail store there at 412 South 9th. Now, Bonnie Foster had that big Foster's Warehouse furniture up on Front. So she had a big sign painted on her building, and her building was painted gray. I think it was gray and gray, dark gray and light gray. So I decided that what I needed was to get my building so that you could see it, you know, the big yellow building on 9th Street. So when I advertised to you people, you know, you could find me. So I hired a contractor, and I painted the building caterpillar yellow. And while the painter was painting, I was standing out in the parking lot there watching, and sure enough, here's the painter painting away, and Bonnie Foster came over, and she said, oh, Mr. Gordon, I'd like to talk to you. I said, well, hi, Bonnie, how you doing? And she said, oh, that color, isn't that garish? She said, garish. I didn't know what garish was. And I said, no, that's caterpillar yellow. And she looked at me like I was Mork from Ork. You know? No, that's what happens, you know, when you use big words, you know. So she said, but it doesn't fit with the neighborhood. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, the color doesn't fit with the neighborhood. You see, my building is in subtle earth tones. And then the Cedars restaurant behind you, it's painted in subtle earth tones. And then it dawned on me. I said to myself, well, she doesn't like the color. I said, well, is it the color that you don't like? And she said, yes, that yellow color, it's just awful, don't you think? I said, no, I don't think so at all. In fact, I kind of like it. And she said, well, there's no one else here in the business community that's going to approve of that or is going to like it. And I said, what the hell do I care what you like? I'm paying for this. So I said, well, if you don't like that color, would you like to paint this building some other color? And she says, oh, yes. And I said, well, there's the painting contractor right over there. You just go right over there and tell him what color you want to paint this building. And then you pay him. And she looked at me like I was nuts. Now, where else can you get an offer like that? Your neighbor's painting his house and you don't like the color. You walk over and you say, Bob, I don't like the color you're painting your house. And Bob looks at you and says, Well, listen, George, if you don't like the color, you just paint my house whatever color you want, but you pay for it. You know, it used to be in America, the guy that was painting the building and paying for it's the guy that got to pick the color. Now you got a community around the neighborhood over here says, well, we don't agree with the color you're painting your building. We want to tell you what color to paint your building, and we want you to pay for it. That's America today. That's central planning. They call that zoning and planning, you know, in most cities. And as long as you've got that, you're not going to have people get out there and risk their venture capital, you know. They're not going to get out there and solve problems. Now, America didn't have an energy problem 100 years ago or 50 years ago. And the more government regulation, the more we interfere in the marketplace, then the bigger the problem becomes. Until finally, all of you central planners and all of you central plannees out there are going to freeze in the dark. That's the ultimate end of this, you know, when you get down to the bottom line, freezing in the dark. That's what happened in China when they practiced communism. That's what's going on in North Korea. Have you ever seen a picture of North Korea from a satellite at night? It's dark. South Korea, you can see the line right across the peninsula. South Korea is a bright light and North Korea is dark. The people in North Korea are starving to death. They're living on the edge of poverty with central planning. The people in South Korea have property rights and they're practicing property and property rights. We Americans still have the highest standard of living in the world because we're living on the residue of property and property rights, but we're working as hard as we can to destroy property and property rights and replace it with central planning. Right now, we're not starving to death and we're not suffering from poverty, but we're working as hard as we can so that we can reverse that. And I would say we ought to reconsider. Well, I'm just about out of time, so I'm going to have to cut it off right there. We'll be back here to pick up this thing of nuclear power, coal, oil, nuclear, hydro, wind, and solar energy. Tomorrow night, same time, same station, when we return. Now, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States and worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to my website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and The Law School teaches tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. So for more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. Well, there's a signal that says my time's about up. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, I'm George Gordon. Thanks for listening, and good night, friends.